Hi, my name's Elaine. I'm here at the Akiba Library to speak to David, who is our marketing officer, about the five books that mapped his life. Good afternoon.
Hi, Elaine. How are you?
I'm very well. Welcome to our little booth and our discussion about books. So we shall go back and start where we always start, with your childhood book. What was the book in childhood that mapped your life?
So I think for me, I grew up sort of reading Roald Dahl books, so like The Twits and Matilda and Fantastic Mr. Fox and things like that. But I think for me, the one that really kind of stuck out was The Witches.
So right.
The Witches is like my first book. And there's a slightly sort of angsty gothic-y-ness.
There is.
All my choices today.
Okay.
Yeah. But for me, this is one of these books where when I read it, I was just like, this is absolutely rad, it's completely mental. There's this, you know, boy gets turned into a mouse, and there's this whole sort of secret underground conspiracy of like witches, and it's actually a thing. And it was the idea that, you know, witches kind of lived among us, but again, the execution that like Roald Dahl pulled off, and then, you know, the illustrations that kind of came along with Quentin Blake, it was just something that for me kind of really sort of captured reading a story as a child. And it's like, when I was thinking back about, you know, what books did I read as a kid, and like I read a lot more then than I do now. I'm not a big reader by any means.
Okay.
But
you're breaking my heart.
Sorry.
Seriously, you're breaking my heart. But anyway, moving on.
But with that, I kind of felt that, you know, I think The Witches and The Twits were the two that really stood out to me. But I think definitely The Witches more, because it was like a longer story.
And it was a big grown-up book.
Yeah.
More than a smaller book.
And like kind of reading it as well. I remember the copy I had was like very sort of battered. And
where did you get your copy from?
I got it from my local library.
Well done.
Actually. So, and then I did buy it myself as well. But I did spend a lot of time reading the Horrible Histories book.
Yes, they're very good.
So that was something I read a lot when I was younger, but not so much as kind of, you know, you go to the teenage years and books aren't cool and so on and so forth.
That's quite a nice segue. So we're moving from your childhood into teenage years, early 20s. Which direction are we going in now?
I would say back end of the teenage years, sort of like 16, 17. And the next one on the list is Catcher in the Rye.
Right. Classic.
So for me, that one was something that it was very much, I was going to New York, you know, John Lennon was assassinated by the guy holding the book, and then I was like, well, I want to read this book, you know, we're going to New York, we're going to be visiting the area where Lennon was assassinated, and I was a Beatles fan growing up, and it was that kind of like, you know, when you're 17 and you're rebelling against everything, you're reading the angstiest books possible because you think you're cool, and then turns out everybody else is doing it as well.
Yeah, so you're really sort of not cool, but
it doesn't really work. But again, it was one of those books where it was like, I felt I had to read it, and I think because it was such a sort of small, sort of light novel, but it was so detailed, and what you're reading, you could really kind of get a sense of like Holden's character as well. And it was one of these books that when I think back like on my life and like what books I've read, is like I can kind of pinpoint like what books I've been reading at the time. So like this was like very much like a period of transition in my life where I was going from being like a high school student to going off to university. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a holiday to New York with family in between.
So and this like book is that book. Very well wedged in that memory.
Yeah, yeah.
It's part of the memory of New York and the Dakota Building and John Lennon and
everything.
It's all there in one book.
Yeah.
It's amazing how books can do that.
Yeah, and it's weird as well because it's one of the books that I still have like just sitting on my shelf. I have like donated books to libraries, to charity shops and stuff. I've stopped reading them, but it's one of the books that I've always kind of
kept with
as well. So it's always there, like on my bookshelf,
which is great. Moving on from your teenage years to your 20s,
university.
Excellent.
Yep. So naturally, progression. You think of like a kind of key time in your life and a book that you were reading, and for me, it was a book called Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yes.
So this was actually owned by a flatmate of mine. And he read it in second year. And again, you're thinking you're at uni, you're the business, you know,
you're
everything.
Cool.
You know, and you're wanting to read the edgiest novels. Now.
Yeah.
So somebody listening to this is thinking, Jesus, that guy's an idiot if he thinks Perks of Being a Wallflower is an edgy novel.
But it was a few years ago.
Exactly.
It was cool at the time.
I was young. I was like,
it's fine. We'll let it go.
Yeah. So he gave me that to read, and it's one of the books that I have read by borrowing and then bought it yourself myself and then reread it and reread it again. Like, I seldom reread a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I like small novels, like sort of 200-300 pages, mm-hmm. because I don't feel like it's such a chore. Like, I feel it's very much a chore to be reading.
So like a big doorstep book.
That's not for me. But again, you know, university, second year going into third year,
mm-hmm.
Not doing that well in exams at the time. So, you know, it's like a period of my life that I remember. But I just remember like just reading this book and just this like, it's a very small sort of A5 book that I was able to just pick up and read. And
so what is it about that book? What is it?
It was quite similar to Catcher in the Rye,
okay.
as well. And that's kind of how it was pitched to me.
It
was like a modern take on it, an angsty take. And it did have like sort of twists and turns in it as well that you didn't really see coming. And mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
No.
But it was one of those ones where the story was, it just kind of brought you in and you felt like, you know, you were in Charlie's life, you kind of knew what was going on. You were like, oh yeah, I can identify that mm-hmm. with that. And I think you seldom kind of came across a book that had like a reflective male lead
mm-hmm.
in the books as well. You didn't really have that. It was like, you know, usually it was, you were telling the tale of somebody. There wasn't like, for me, I felt like I was very much involved in that book, involved in that story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why this is a book that I've just gone back to again.
It's
and
stuck
again and
with
again.
You
yeah.
over these years. So moving on from book three to book four, what is next on this journey?
So we jump ahead a little bit.
Oh no.
To, I would say, maybe mid to late 20s.
Okay.
So before I worked here, I initially started out as a volunteer at Surgeons Hall Museums in Edinburgh.
In Edinburgh.
So that's an anatomy museum, and for those who don't know, that's basically what's in it is anatomy, it's human remains, it's fascinating. But as a volunteer, I had a lot of time to kind of read when I was there.
That doesn't sort of say much about where you were working if you had an awful lot of time to read.
It doesn't, but now you would not have any time to read because
obviously.
It's far too busy
okay.
because
okay.
of the, you know, the exceptional work that was carried out.
Of course,
yeah.
by yourself.
Naturally.
Obviously.
And with that place, I had a lot of time to read and I did kind of work my way through a lot of books. And one book I was put onto was a book which is now a popular film, Ready Player One.
Yes.
So Ready Player One, again, very much, you know, fitting with part of my life where I think there was like a big kind of change in life. I was working part-time in a supermarket, I was volunteering in a museum, I was doing postgrad, there was kind of lots going on. And this was like my downtime, so I was reading this book and it was, you get, when you play video games, you play video games to experience video games. And you don't necessarily get good novelizations of video games
no.
where you can think, oh yeah, I recognize that. That's very much a trope from a game.
Okay.
And I think Ready Player One kind of brought that across and just some of the sort of the gamified elements of
mm-hmm.
it, I felt were amazing. I could totally imagine it as a game.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading it, I could recognize it as a game. I could recognize it with references to games.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it was something that like kind of really stuck out to me and I was like, I love this book. It's like, it's absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's one of these ones where I think, you know, I'm reading a book about video games and it's actually good, you know, which was hard to kind of come
which is
by
quite
as
a
well.
Hard thing to do.
Yeah.
With video games.
Yeah, definitely, because video games doesn't really translate well
no.
like, into any other sort of medium. Like video game movies are like, you know.
How do you feel the movie stacked up against the book?
I liked it,
but
I do prefer the book.
Fair enough, which is good.
Which I think is a good answer, but I think it's also, you know, I had really positive memories of the book, and then I saw the movie and I enjoyed the movie and how it looked, and I never actually thought I would see a movie off that book.
What
on
you'd
the screen.
Read in the pages.
So even when it was like announced, I was, oh my god, I'm really excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I've seen it like 3 or 4 times as well. Because I didn't hate it, but I
well, obviously,
it
if you watch it 3 or 4 times,
yeah,
that's,
exactly.
You know.
But it was again, that was another book that was kind of like, you know, it was very much like moving from becoming like part time in a supermarket to becoming a volunteer to part time in a museum
mm-hmm.
as well at the time. So
mm-hmm.
it was again, it was like a
another transition in your life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which
leads us on to our final book.
It does very, very nicely.
Yeah,
book number 5.
So this is another slightly dark book, which has been, I think, maybe a little bit of a theme, a bit of sort of
there has been a theme of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So again, working at Surgeons Hall, I was put on to a book called The Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Other Lessons from the Crematorium.
Delightful. Absolutely which delightful.
Is by Caitlin Doherty, and she is a mortician who basically her whole kind of spiel is like death positive, mm-hmm. and like how people are kind of really bought into the death industry, and mm-hmm. that people are making money off people dying. So she's very much kind of talks about behind the scenes in the death industry, you know, what people ask you to do, what they spend money on, what they don't, mm-hmm. you don't need to do. And it kind of was like, it's really kind of interesting, sort of an avenue to kind of go down to kind of read more. Because when you think about death and sort of culture generally, it's not really something that's kind of actively discussed.
No, it's not a talking point.
No, it's not.
Coffee mornings, really.
No, it's not. And it's probably not something you'd expect to hear on a podcast.
No.
Either. But at the same time, it's an excellent book. It's really well written. It kind of goes against the sort of tropes of, like, you know, crematorium mm-hmm. morticians. And it is, like, America-focused, but mm-hmm. you can see kind of the ideas mm-hmm. and the thoughts coming through. And kind of on the back of this book, Caitlin has sort of established, like, a YouTube series, and she's one of, like, a bunch of sort of death-positive speakers. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of really sort of, my eyes were opened to that world of writers, a lot mm-hmm. of female writers, who sort of wrote about death in a positive way in medicine mm-hmm. and the history of medicine. And I think it's just because it was where I was.
Well, yeah, kind you know, of fitted so, into where you were sort of.
Yeah, but it's an absolutely it's fascinating book. You know, it's again, it's a book that I like recommending to people okay. because I think it's a bit left.
It's odd. It's not a book yeah. that I was expecting to be discussing.
Yeah.
On a podcast.
Exactly. But it's also a book that's available in the library.
Which is a very good segue onto mm-hmm. that. That's, you know, get yeah. your library card out and get this book.
Exactly. And it is a really good book. And I would definitely recommend, like, if you're listening to this podcast mm-hmm. and you're thinking, oh, these books all sound a wee bit random, I think this is definitely one to kind of pick out, because it mm-hmm. is a really interesting kind of, you know, very kind of honest take on mm-hmm. sort of like death culture, something that's not really discussed. So yeah, I think for me, that's the kind of five books that kind of map my life.
So far have mapped your life.
So far.
We'll come back another 20 years and then we'll see what your choices will be at that point in time. Anyway, thank you so much for speaking to me, and I will speak again soon. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Cheers.
Bye.